Blog Talk Radio. Moment of every day, your 17 trillion cells are somewhere in the process of dividing and being reborn, always in the process of dying and regenerating themselves. And the question is, are you contributing towards healthy cellular regeneration, or are you participating to genetic mutations, ill health down the line, passing along genetic conditions to your children, all related to lifestyle factors? So these questions and more we ask and attempt to answer here on Eating for Meaning. And I want to welcome you to the show. My name is Dr. Millie Lytle, and I'm a naturopathic doctor and a nutrition specialist. And this is my weekly show on Blog Talk Radio. It's called Eating for Meaning. And Eating for Meaning is based along four principles. One, that nutrition is the most important aspect of eating. Number two, that we have to infuse adventure and joy into food and eating. Otherwise, we won't be able to have the variety in our diet that is necessary, if it is even possible, to get all of our nutrition from food. And we must be mindful of what we're putting in our mouth, not only mindful of the food itself, the quality of food, the timing of the food, but the impact, how the food makes us feel when we eat it. And on a larger scale, the ethics that were put into how the food was raised and reared, if good farming practices were used, and how that food fits into the greater economic scope even. And lastly, Eating for Meaning is about epigenetics, which means that not only are genes that are inherited from our parents, but also our lifestyle and our environment, which includes the food that we eat, all have an impact on our genes and whether or not we express illness in the long run or not, and also whether or not we pass along illness or health to the next generation, to our children and our grandchildren. And so, again, I want to welcome you to the show. Every week I have some special guests, and this week, no different from others, although I do have a very unique guest this week. He is in Pennsylvania while I'm here in New York, broadcasting live from Mountain. Today I will interview Ron Eichner, and Ron Eichner is Ron Eichner runs the Eichner Family Farm, and it's a four-generation farming operation. And Ron says if you're concerned about sustainable agriculture, one of the most important things you can do is hug your farmer. So he's a humorous one, and I'm really looking forward to having him on the show today. Ron Eichner is an avid producer of high-quality organic poultry and eggs in Wexford, Pennsylvania. He also sells organic vegetables, baked goods, and homemade sauerkraut from his rural Pennsylvania farm. The farm, as I mentioned, is family-owned and operated, and it's been serving the Wexford, PA Hills since 1932. They operate on 18 acres located just off of Route 19 in Wexford, Pennsylvania, and they provide the freshest eggs in the North Hills, as well as delicious fresh produce year-round. They provide fresh eggs, whole roasting chickens, and assorted pork products. In addition to these, they also offer other items in their farmer's market. And so, Ron Eichner, I want to welcome you to the show today. Thanks so much for being on.
Hey, good afternoon, Dr. Millie, and I want to steal a line from yours. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are out there. Thank you for the little bio.
Absolutely. And so I'm so happy to have you on the show today. You and I have been working around a supplement company. We've known each other from a supplement company called Invite Health for the past couple years, and I know that I really support those products, and I work for that company, and you really support those products as well, and you use them. And so this is how we've known each other. So over the past couple of years, we've had numerous conversations about your vision, about healthcare and wellness and your own personal health and your family health, and also trying to help your community. I know you're a person who's very dedicated to helping your community. And so this is one reason why, and because of your personality, of course, you've got a masterful personality. And so I thought you'd be a great radio guest. And so I'm so happy that you joined me on the show today. We're going to try to tackle a lot of topics. And first and foremost, we're going to talk about Ron's idea of having a farm wellness center. And so in addition to the products that he offers, the foods that he offers, but also his concepts of wellness. And he asked me if I would kick off what exactly wellness is. And so for many of you who might be listening, you might think of healthcare, or you might think of medicine, and you might think of taking drugs or doing surgeries or interventions that heal or treat or get rid of a problem, a health problem that you might be suffering from. So if you get sick, you go to the doctor, you take an antibiotic. If you if you have an accident, you go to the hospital, you get sewn up, or you have a heart attack, you go to the hospital, you get the medications and the surgery required. And so that's all an aspect. That's how medicine functions these days. And that concept has really grown into something that's called sick care, which is really taking care of people once they're sick. And that's where the majority of our country's healthcare resources go, is towards taking care of people and saving the life of people once they've had some dramatic illness. But wellness, or well care, or even the literal term health care, really tries to focus on our overall greater well-being. So the level of wellness that you have comes from the health that you were born with when you were born. So the health of your parents that they passed on to you, that if anything happened to you when you were a baby or a child that changed your level of health, if you had a disease that you had to overcome, or if you've had lots of stress, or if you've had an accident or injuries. And so all of these things go into the details of what creates the concept of our own personal wellness and how well we are and what our wellness potential is. And what I try to promote with my Eating for Meaning program and being a naturopathic doctor is really trying to help people become healthier or become feeling better, more energetic, and have their immune systems more stable in their own body as well as in their own mind, so that you can, as listeners, live your life happier and healthier and having less illness. And so in that way, wellness is also about preventing illness. It's about preventing colds and flus and not being as susceptible to getting the flu every year. And we can even use natural means, I'm not talking about the vaccine, I'm talking about natural ways to increase our immune system so that our body's able to fight any viruses, bacteria, fungus, yeast, molds that are in the environment. Because we as Americans, or wherever you're listening in the world, are living in a toxic world. And so just because the world is toxic, does that mean that our own bodies are afflicted by that? Some people are and some people aren't. And what is the difference? And wellness is the difference. So how we carry on our daily life. And so these are some first instinctual thoughts that I have, Ron, when we're discussing wellness. And I know that you want to make this show really fun as well, because we're talking about farming and naturopathy, and how fun are those two things? So what are your concepts of wellness? How do you see your own wellness or the wellness of your community?
Well, I look at wellness as an evolvement. A lot of times, you know, people only become proactive when they have an issue. And a lot of times when the issue occurs, it could be manifesting for 5, 10, 20 years. And I think if we can kind of share our thoughts and encourage people. Wellness is like laying a foundation for a building. You know, it's a block at a time, but you want to put it together on solid ground, on solid footing. And life is a process of basically a structure and continually to remodel. And it takes, you know, some skills. It takes, you know, good people like yourself as far as, you know, you have just a wealth of knowledge and information with, you know, the way you were educated and all the types of skills that you have. And you know, I think that's, I want to use the word, you know, valuable times 10.
Thank you, Ron.
And it's just, you know, people today, on a farm, it's almost kind of natural to have a retail farm marketing set up and also blend in a bit of wellness because, you know, people, especially in the last 10, 12 years, are coming more to the farm because they want to try to go back to the source. And I always tell people, you know, when you come to the farm, at least, you know, I can speak for our location, we take the time with a customer, if they have any questions, whether it's poultry, vegetable production, whatever, or if they want to take a walk out in the field, there might be a time where we just can't personalize to the extent because of the time of year. But we're here to ascertain and entertain, you know, whatever concerns or questions they have. And that, in my view, that's all part of, you know, sustaining agriculture, but most importantly, trying to build a relationship with your customer that's for a lifetime.
Yeah, and I've taken a visit to your farm, and it's kind of like it was in the old days. It's like going to a farm and seeing the animals, and you can see the chickens and the eggs, and you can see this kind of. I'm not going to say your farm is small. It's not a small farm, but it's tangible. It's not this great big vast place where people don't understand, or I mean, images that we see of farms on the website, you know, with swamps and sewers of, I don't know, pig feces everywhere, and just like all of these horrible things associated with corporate farming or factory farming. Your farm is just like a farm that we would picture back in the olden days, and it's so nice to have that connection to the land and to our food, and that's definitely part of wellness. I think that's something that people are realizing, and definitely something that I'm trying to promote is that the relationship between food and having a hands-on approach to food is really important when it comes to people being responsible for their own health and well-being and the health and well-being of their families. It really starts there, in a sense.
Yeah, whenever you pull into the farm, is my grandfather, he was from Germany, and immigrated to America at the age of 28 in 1926, but he calls the place a hump and a holler. You know, the business sits in a valley, but you can take the roadway to the top of the hill to where most of our crop production is. But in the last 25 years, on our eastern and northern side, and development has encroached not on our farm, but to our property line and their townhouses. And that type of encroachment as far as with townhouses, when you have, let's say, 216 townhouse units on 22 acres, that's high density, and a lot of times it might not be the proper blend to be right up against agriculture. But we in agriculture have been blessed by our state legislators over the years to try to protect the resources and everything that farming really offers. And in the state of Pennsylvania, agriculture still is the number one industry. And in our case, with having poultry, which is chickens and turkeys, they generate manure, and you could have, you know, fly issues. And we do everything that we can in good practices to try to manage the fly issues. And sometimes with a townhouse community, and years ago, they had some fly concerns, and actually that was brought in by landscape material was brought in, but we were the target of concern and question because, you know, we have poultry. And, but, you know, when you have livestock, there's a good chance that you can have insects, and we just manage, you know, the best we can. And one thing I can't, you know, thank enough to our legislators in Pennsylvania. Basically, they do a lot of protection of the farms, right? The farm, not to jump up on a pedestal and brag or what, but I was the one that implemented ag preservation in northern Allegheny County. Now, in Allegheny County, we're just 15 miles north of Pittsburgh. It's not quite urban yet, but it's very suburban. And ironically, whenever I initiated that back in 1992, now ag preservation gives our farm community, once you have an ag district, our legislators and also the Department of Agriculture can protect you in certain ways, and that's, you know, very important. But what I implemented back in 1992 from a gentleman from Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture, usually presents it, basically said what Ron has done here in ag preservation has never been done, not only in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, but in North part of the United States in ag preservation. And the point I want to make is, in ag preservation, there's vehicles out there for farmers to utilize, and the biggest thing is for us to be not only stewards of our own land, but stewards of what the laws and try to stay focused on our own self-preservation, because we want to be here to support the communities, but we also need the community support.
Absolutely, and so the farming practice, being able to have good farming practices is important, I guess, politically speaking, and definitely relies on the politics, and also relies on the support of the community. And so how have you, I know that my family has, now that you and I have been talking these years, and I know your family, and you know my family now because my family shops at your farm market. And so let's talk about how you've extended the concept of the farm and having a farmer's market, which I think is just a wonderful grassroots way to buy organic vegetables locally. I mean, it's even more prosumerist, or even it's even more kind of grassroots than going to a farmer's market that's out at the park or something. It's just going directly to the farm itself. So how have you managed to kind of incorporate your concepts of wellness into your community and into your farmer's market?
Two things, but I might ask you to bring me back on track. But when you're mentioning about the families and such, and as we know, on your dad's side, you know, was from Western Pennsylvania, and your mother's side was you know, from New Brunswick, Canada. And I always try to profess that Dr. Millie's a homer here from Western Pennsylvania. You know, with family here and that, and you know, you're up in New York, but you know, you got a warm spot in our hearts here in Western Pennsylvania, and hopefully for a long time, you know, in the future. As far as on the blend of farming and wellness and the community and such, agriculture has continued to be the number one industry, and one way for us farmers to sell our wares, we'll go back 50 years ago, you really had three options. You could go house-to-house delivery to individuals' houses, which we still do. My dad does 2 days a week, Tuesday and Thursdays. Or you could go to the strip district and take your produce, your seasonal produce, in there to sell it. Or you can go like to a tailgate market or a community market. In the farm markets that we know today that most people patronize or understand, that concept called direct marketing has really only come into play in the last 50 years. But what it does, most importantly, for the community and the farm, number one, it gives a retail exposure for the farmer to sell his goods, seasonal vegetables and such, and it gives an outlet for the community or your customers to come to the business and to purchase, you know, those wares. And what we have done as far as a family, like most of the family farms that are left in our area, you just keep building on, you know, what you do and try to improve on what you do good to do it better.
Okay. And so I know that you have quite a following there. You're being, for some reason, you are being very humble. And so I'm going to get you to start bragging sometime soon about all your knowledge. But we are going to go to break. And Ron Eichner is my very special guest today. He is an avid producer of high-quality organic poultry and eggs, and he sells vegetables and baked goods and homemade sauerkraut from his rural Pennsylvania farm. And I am an honorary Western Pennsylvanian, and I am also, well, it's by birthright because my father is from the Western Pennsylvania, from the Pittsburgh area. But the Eichner Farm has been operating since 1932 in Wexford, PA. They provide the freshest eggs in the North Hills. And so Ron Eichner, operator of the family farm, is my special guest today. We're going to go to break. And when we come back, we have a lot more to talk about. We're talking about wellness today on Eating for Meaning. Join me back. This is Dr. Millie.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
This is Dr. Millie on Eating for Meaning here on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting to you live from Brooklyn, New York, at my clinic, which is Mountain, located at 903 Franklin Avenue in Crown Heights area of Brooklyn. And I want to invite you to stop by if you're in the Brooklyn area, or if you are somewhere of a distance, then please do go to my website at www.milliesays.com. That's M-I-L-L-I-E-S-A-Y-S. You can sign up for my newsletter. If you like what you're hearing on this show, then please do follow along here on Blog Talk. And even if you can't make the live show every week, then these shows are also available on podcast. And so please tell all your friends and share with all your people if you're liking what you hear today. And I am liking what I am hearing because I've got a very special guest today. His name is Ron Eichner, and he is a farm operator from Wexford, Pennsylvania, in Western Pennsylvania. He's an organic poultry and egg farmer. And Ron has a vision of wellness for his community. And so let's talk more about how you see wellness. So we talked about how wellness is a support. It's a solid foundation to support one's health. And there's so many different concepts in how people are working to achieve wellness these days. And I find, Ron, that people are so bombarded with so much nutritional information, sometimes it's even confusing. And the disparity or the gap that between, you know, what people are hearing from their medical doctors, which is just, you know, take this pill for this, or all of these, if they're more interested in nutrition and lifestyle, there's so many different fad diets out there. How do you kind of merge those gaps when you're discussing health or when you're thinking about health and wellness?
Well, the first thing, you know, you're saying about, let's say, nutrition and supplements, and as we know, meaning you and I, not all supplements are created the same. And a lot of times people, you know, they think, you know, vitamin C is just vitamin C, but, you know, if you throw the curve, okay, what is it, synthetic? Is it natural? What do you mean by synthetic? And there's a lot of vitamins that are cheaply made as a supplement, and realistically, you know, they're not the best for you. So I think there can be a lot of confusion out there, you know, with people and amongst people. And you know, you had referenced earlier about Invite Health, and that's an excellent supplement company, you know, up in Eastern New York. And that's what I try to build on as far as is to network with a good source. In the case of supplements, you know, a company like that. And always, I can't stress enough as far as in thought that you always want to make sure that, you know, when you're comparing price, a lot of times you might be paying a lot for nothing, or you could be paying a lot for a lot. And it really comes down to either some personal research or relying on someone's input, and that's what I want to try to bring together with a wellness center, you know, and ascertain and entertain, you know, questions and concerns, you know, that my customers would have.
And so do people come to you and discuss their health issues, and or how does that kind of happen?
Basically, most people come in I usually kind of hit them with the dry humor and then they're looking for a clinic to go to as far as for a psychological adjustment. No.
After their conversation with you? Or
right. Oh, what, without a doubt. No, as far as, you know, they people come in, number one, and we've been getting in the last couple of years first-time people coming in to the farm market. And if I'm around the farm market and they come in and say, oh, this is the first time I was in, I would ask, you know, how did you find out about us? And then you just walk them through that, hey, we have fresh eggs from our own chickens. We make homemade pork products once a week. So that really complements, you know, a breakfast aspect. And then talk about vegetables. Try to walk the person through our small store and express what we do and how we do it. I'm not saying it's done every time, you know, someone comes in or, you know, what my help does, but that's what we try to instill in them, to take that little bit of personal time, you know, with the customer.
Yeah, well, I know it's more than a full-time job to operate a farm and to serve a community and to even provide food for your own family. And so to take the time also to extend yourself to the population and to introduce them to vitamins and supplements and people like me, I mean, it really shows a lot of dedication that you have for the health of the people who are coming to your farm and just a general concern for people's well-being. And so you've sent me some points that you want to make in terms of, you know, the wellness work isn't a fad, like it's not a magic bullet. So this is something that's, you know, by the time people get frustrated with their doctors or by the time they're sick and things are not working for them, I used to find that was the time that I would see people. So, you know, seeing a naturopathic doctor would be their last resort kind of thing. And they were already so ill or so on so many medications or so frustrated by the medical system that they're like, okay, well, I might as well try this, you know, other kind of doctor that I've never heard of or don't know what that is. And so, but now over the last, I mean, I've been practicing naturopathic medicine for 13 years. So for that long, now I find that people really do want to try to make an impact on their health for a variety of reasons. And even younger and younger people are looking to do that. So it's not people who are looking for a last resort anymore, but they are really wanting to take the time out. And so how, do you find that people are interested in the time that it takes to generate wellness for themselves?
I think that really comes, you know, down to the individual. I don't want to use the word ADD, but it seems like, you know, society today, you know, there's a lot of attention deficit disorder. You know, what's the fad now or what's in now or what's vogue? And you know, what where my concern always has been as far as with customers and wellness, it really kind of come natural, was when a customer comes in, I mean, you can always strike up a conversation about the weather. And but usually it builds into, hey, I'm feeling this way or I'm feeling that way. And I've kind of, you know, listened over the years to good people, good doctors, good pharmacists, and kind of developed a knack to kind of share what I've learned, you know, with my customers. And conceivably, what I want to do is to help the customer to better their enjoyment of life. Because a lot of times, I think some people don't understand the fact that when they're taking a medicine, they're really not looking at what the side effects could be, but they're experiencing them. And a lot of meds, and then whenever you cocktail them, meaning start to manifest with 3 or 4 or 5 different meds, or some people's on as much as 10 meds, boy, it could just become a horrible mix of chemistry. And you know, as far as in your practice and such, I mean, you've seen, you know, from A to Z and everything in between. No two things are the same, but the biggest thing is share our knowledge, that's all.
Right, it is true, because, I mean, pharmaceutical medications, as they do work to do what they say they're going to do for at least 50% of the people. That's what the success rate has to be in order for them to get regulated. But every pharmaceutical medication has a side effect, and the side effects are so much more common even than people or even their medical doctors want to admit, and oftentimes the side effects are completely misunderstood. And so side effects will come on if you're on a medication and you start to notice that you're experiencing fatigue, or you start to noticing that you're experiencing an upset stomach or indigestion or constipation, diarrhea, nausea, or if you're starting to notice that you get headaches. I guess one role of those of us who are wanting to increase wellness is to try to help you relieve the side effects from a natural way, because otherwise you're going to end up back at the same doctor who may or may not realize that the side effects that you're experiencing or these new symptoms you're experiencing are as a result of the medication, may not have a tool really to address it, or may just give a Band-Aid or a new medication that will help to suppress the side effects that you're experiencing. And the problem with that is that every single drug has its own set of side effects. So every new drug you go on, you're also going to generate new side effects by going on that new drug. And some of those side effects are nutrition related, like they're nutrient deficiencies. So drugs need to be studied for their efficacy, so whether or not they work. They have to be studied for their potency, so at which dose you have to take in order to produce a certain effect in order for them to work. They have to be studied for their timing, how often you have to take it and at what time of day in order for it to lower your blood pressure or lower your cholesterol or lower your blood sugar or stop your dizziness or stop your pain. And then they also have to be researched for their harm, so what the most common side effects are generated by that medication, and then those harms are categorized according to severe reactions or moderate adverse reactions or minor adverse reactions. And this information is all available. So even when you're listening to the TV, you listen to those side effects that might be caused by the medications that you're taking. But you can also go onto WebMD.com, and you can go onto the MayoClinic.com. You can go on these different websites that are really available for you to, if you are on certain medications, you can see what the side effects are. And I do encourage people to do that, because that's one way to get a handle on your own symptom picture. But the second thing is that I want to point out is that nutrient deficiencies are not something that drugs have to be studied for. So when drugs are blocking enzymes, or when drugs are blocking a certain a chain reaction with proteins in your body, in the biochemical, the pharmacology of your body, sometimes they're reducing nutrients. And it's the reason that I'm so passionate about supplements, Ron, in addition to food, is because food can't replace nutrients that are lost from as a side effect from a medication, because we just can't eat a single nutrient that's depleted by a medication enough to get that nutrient back in our body. If it's iatrogenically, which means it's induced by medication or it's induced by medicine that is depleted, then we can't just eat a normal diet and get it back. And so this becomes, I think, even more important that we take certain supplements and that we consult people who know, you know, who know the side effects, who know the nutritional deficiencies associated with certain medications. I just went off in the mouth. Are you still with me?
Now, if I can just interject, I have several friends that are medical doctors, and basically, and I'm gonna toss a torch back to you when I make this comment. You know, you did 4 years of major medical, and then you went in a different direction. And in a summary, you know, my contacts, their education, medical education, really had nil or nothing to do with nutrition. But as we know, nutrition is a very big part. And you know, to hand you the, if you just want to just share with the audience just a bit of you know, your education with, you know, you got the medical experience, but then you also cultivated the nutrition side and other sides, and how it all ties together.
Yeah. Well, so basically, just to clarify a little bit, because what I did was I went to a naturopathic medical school, which is a private medical program. It's separate from medicine. So I never attended standard medical school. I attended a private school. I did pre-med, and then I did naturopathic medicine, which you do physiology and anatomy and biochemistry and pharmacy, and you do all of those topics, but at the same time as you're doing those topics, you're learning the whole time to treat the body from a holistic standpoint. So learning to treat the body, focus on nutritional biochemistry and what's happening nutritionally in the body. So in that way, it's the same scientific education as a medical doctor, but when it comes to treatments, it's entirely different, or even the shift. Like in medical school, they learn to break down the body into different organ systems and treat those organ systems independently. That's why there's all these medical specialties: cardiology, gastroenterology, rheumatology, immunology. Naturopathic medicine we do not focus on that. We focus on how the body interrelates, because all of those systems are working together. It's the same body. And so if you're looking holistically at something, then you can conceive that, oh, a nutrient deficiency would cause symptoms in more than one area of the body. For instance, iron deficiency can cause heart palpitations, and then a person would be running to the cardiologist. Iron deficiency can cause hair loss, and then a person would be running to the dermatologist. Iron deficiency can cause shortness of breath, and the person would be running to the respirologist or the ENT. And so naturopathic medicine really looks at putting all these things together and looking at how the body functions as one being, including the mind and the spirit as well. So it's not even just the physical body. So it really approaches things absolutely differently. But yeah, my training is that I can examine I can examine a person, I can give you a physical exam, check your blood pressure, look in your ears, nose, eyes, and find out what's going on. And I absolutely rely on blood work in order to know what's going on inside the body. But when it comes to treatment and even the philosophy of how we procure health, it's really focused on bringing the body back into a balance, relying on the body's innate ability to heal itself, which is, you know, it relies on different laws, different fundamental laws that medicine. Medicine's really driven by a different angle altogether than naturopathic medicine.
Hey, one thing, if I can, that little outline that I had sent you, you know, the next item was developing eating skills, but if you can maybe just expand a bit on the importance of protein, especially at breakfast, and how it kind of really helps mental health.
Sure. So the thing is that if we look at our entire population and how we eat, there's a lot of similarities with how people are eating state to state in the United States. State to state, people are eating similar. So, and if we think about what we're eating at breakfast, it's really over time for various reasons. So, you know, people have been told to avoid eggs because of the cholesterol, or people have been told to avoid bacon because of the saturated fat, or people have been told people have buy for convenience. So they buy like the cold box cereal, or they buy the instant oatmeal. And so what's happened, what's evolved in our nutrition patterns over decades now, is that protein has really been cut out of our breakfast. And so, and as this has happened, if we look at the rise of metabolic issues like diabetes, and if we look at the rise of high blood pressure and high cholesterol and obesity, and so these kind of imbalances, these are called metabolic illnesses, or even metabolic syndrome, when you kind of have all of these numbers are off, your blood pressure's off, your blood sugar's off, your cholesterol's off, you have a fat stomach. This is called metabolic syndrome. And so even if you don't have frank diabetes or frank high blood pressure, then you still could have metabolic syndrome if you have a combination of all these symptoms. And so many Americans have this symptom picture, especially after the age of 30, after the age of 40. And the older we get, the more Americans have this as their physical picture. And it's very much related to how we're eating as a society. And so with all this removing of food based on all these public health warnings and all this, it hasn't helped. That has not been the direction that's helped. And so now there's a bringing it back to really what's sensible in eating. And what's sensible is having protein and good fats at every meal, and especially starting with breakfast, which tends to be one of our biggest either skipped meal. People tend to skip breakfast altogether, or people tend to only eat like carbohydrates. Like if you think of what the Special K breakfast is, which is promoted as the big healthy weight loss breakfast, I mean, that's absolute rubbish, because that breakfast is just carbohydrates. How could it fill a farmer for 20 minutes? I don't think so. You couldn't get very much done, even if you're physical labor, or even if you're a mental labor, you couldn't get very much done for longer than a half an hour on the Special K breakfast, because all it is simple carbs. So it's orange juice, it's skim milk, it's processed grains that are in some form. I mean, who even knows what a Special K is, what grain that comes from, and then some strawberries. So it has a little bit of fiber in it, but it's all carbohydrates. There's no protein in that breakfast, and there's no fat in that breakfast. It's all sugar. And this promotes what we're all trying to struggle against. And so the importance of having protein is multifold in our breakfast. First of all, having protein at breakfast, and this is within an hour of waking, and so this could be eggs, this could be meat, this could be fish, this could be beans. It can be something of an unorthodox breakfast. You can eat lentil soup for breakfast. Who said you couldn't? You can eat eggs for breakfast. You can eat a protein shake for breakfast. But you have to have protein. The importance of it is that eating breakfast with protein within an hour of waking up in the morning sets your metabolism for the day. So you have slow burning calories. And the importance of slow burning calories is that they don't rise your blood sugar. They keep your blood sugar stable so that you can think and focus and work and concentrate for a number of hours. Whereas if you just eat carbohydrates, then the sugar goes to your brain, and then the pancreas goes in, takes the sugar out of the blood and stores it as fat around your belly. And then you have no fuel left over, and then you can be cranky, and you can be moody, and you can be tired, and you can be anxious, and you can be irritable and angry and restless and all of these things. And some people just think that they need another coffee, but really what they're suffering from is the lack of appropriate calories. Usually it's from fats and proteins at breakfast, which slows down the digestion so that your fuel, the carbohydrates fuel that are allotted for your brain, last for a longer period of time. when you eat carbs and then there's also protein and fat there, then you actually have access to those carbohydrates for your brain for about 2 to 3 hours. Whereas if you only eat carbohydrates without protein and fat, then you really only have access to that sugar for about anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes. And so that's the difference between like a starving brain and a satisfied brain. And a satisfied brain is able to produce neurotransmitters. So if we think about what neurotransmitters are brain chemicals. People say they have a chemical imbalance if they're depressed. They have low serotonin. But did you know that your body is producing serotonin every day? And that protein is actually the where you get the nutrient requirements or many of the nutrient requirements to make serotonin. So if you don't have protein, then you're not able to make serotonin. And serotonin is the neurotransmitter, is the brain chemical that makes you feel well. So we're talking about wellness today. And serotonin is that hormone, is that brain chemical that makes you feel like, okay, I'm all right in my life. This is, I can do it. I can work. I can, you know, drop my kids at school. I can relate with my coworkers or my friends or family or spouse or my clients or and so you can conduct your life in a feeling well if you have enough serotonin. And serotonin is also responsible for converting into melatonin, which means if you have enough serotonin, then your body's also likely to produce enough melatonin, which is the sleep hormone. So if you feel well during the day and you eat a diet that allows you to feel well and produce enough serotonin, then you're also going to produce enough melatonin, which means you can go to sleep. And then this is the importance of we all being human beings and living on a 24-hour clock. And abiding by the 24-hour clock is extremely important for wellness. I'm very passionate about that. So I hope that answered your question, Ron, because that's a few factors. It's the blood sugar component and having enough energy and nourishment to sustain you so that you're not always kind of running on empty. And then it's also the fact that the protein makes serotonin for your brain, so it actually does go towards making the neurotransmitters that make you feel well.
Well, you did it. You expanded on it very well. I want to touch on a couple points that I feel. If you look at kids, and I guess the best way is if I would interview a school teacher that started to teach 40 years ago, and if you fast forward it, you know, it seems like a lot of kids have behavior issues, you know, and back to you know, protein breakfast and mental health. I've heard, let's say over the last handful of years, that pharmaceutically they're trying to position to where everyone in our population here in the United States should be on some type of a mind altering substance for either anxiety or whatever. And if you stay on the path of bad choices and such, it might elevate you, you know, for that need. But the reality is it's so important to have a good source of protein for breakfast to set that brain up to kind of balance you through the day. And if people kind of get in that habit or pick up on that tip and just experiment on their own feelings and emotions, you know, it might be just a little quick little tip that just turns a whole heck of a lot of things around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even just carrying nuts and having almonds or walnuts or something like that with you, even if people don't have time to have a proper sit-down breakfast, you can have a yogurt with you, or you can have a boiled egg with you, or you can have some trail mix or a protein shake. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a fancy 3-course breakfast. You can take it on the run as well, but it's extremely important. And this is one reason why kids who have been studied who don't eat breakfast, you know, some of the poorest performing children at school are the kids that don't get breakfast at home. And even just introducing a meal program at school so that they can have breakfast, I mean, how could a hungry child possibly learn? How could a hungry child possibly sit through class? How could a hungry child possibly be focused? And if we look more precisely at, you know, what hunger is, then there's then there's a way to have proper nutrition, which is what you're talking about, having protein, having the good fats in balance with the carbohydrates. And we are just grown up. We are grown up children. I mean, we're the same. We need the same thing as our children need. But we are better at coping if we don't get it. So it might. But really, how can a hungry adult focus, or how can a hungry adult carry on a balanced mood? I mean, it's just not possible. We absolutely need food energy. We need the proper nutrients that we get from food. This is how we make good brain chemistry. Food is chemistry. Food is biochemistry. And our brain and all of our cells function on biochemistry.
If I can interject, as far as my belief is, God created everything, and God created things, a lot of things in a simple form, in a natural form. And my view, whenever we start to shift away from natural, as my grandfather, when he came from Germany in 1926, he said to me, you know, he said, Ronnie, he said, I didn't recognize certain diseases here in America because we didn't have them in Germany. And basically, what Grand Pep indirectly was saying, Germany was like 30 years behind in refinement of foods and grains and such. You know, so as we process or refine things and make changes, it starts to change away from, you know, the simple path that God gave us. And my view is try to stay as natural as possible. But I do also feel that, as you said numerous times, as I've listened to you over the last couple of years, Doctor, you know, we're always trying to focus or bring things back into balance. And one important thing with balance is our immune system. And a lot of times, I think a lot of people think, well, immune system is just your white blood cells, but I think they're also quite surprised to realize that 70% of your immune system is colonized in your gut.
Yep.
And two important focuses is a good source of probiotics or digestive enzymes. And one just quick seed on good probiotics. You know, there's good probiotic supplements, but there's also good sources of good probiotics in your diet, whether it's generally fermented, you know, products like sauerkraut, pickles, soy, good raw dairy. And if you maybe want to kind of share with the audience a bit about the immune system and how important it is to kind of focus to support, and that all really plays into wellness.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess this is another difference between mainstream medicine and natural medicine, which we're always looking at how the body functions normally and trying to bring that back in. So we prioritize that every single human being has trillions of bacteria on them all the time. And so everybody knows about dust mites, and everybody knows about, you might have heard of that there's teeny little bugs living on your eyelashes, but there's even smaller microbes, not even bugs, they're bacteria living all over your skin, all inside your nasal passages, all inside your mouth, inside your stomach, inside your genitals, inside a woman's vagina. Like, all of these places are massive colonizers of bacteria. And the germ theory in medicine really distorted our concept of bacteria. It really, all of this introduction of antibiotics and pasteurization and killing off bacteria never considered that the majority of the bacteria that we're living with and amongst are actually helping us. They're actually helping to form our stool and helping us with elimination and helping us support our immune system and helping our cells communicate with each other. Bacteria are helping to send signals to our brain that we're full. They help to send signals to our brain that we're hungry. They help to send signals to our brain to make certain dopamine and serotonin. And they absolutely do help us fight off other microbes, other bad bacteria, other yeasts, other viruses. And so now that we've been 2.5 or 3 generations, or maybe it's 4 generations now, on antibiotics, many of us just do not have a good balance of microbes anymore. We just don't, because we've killed all the colonies. Every time you take an antibiotic, you also kill good bacteria. And so as in order to maintain wealth or health, and in order to increase the wealth of our health, we really want to increase the amount of good bacteria we get exposed to. Always washing your hands with antibacterial soap is a very bad idea. And it's a very bad idea, although on your skin it might not be as bad of an idea as continually taking antibiotics internally, because when we take antibiotics internally, it's wiping out the colonies of good bacteria that exist in all of these places in our, and primarily in our digestive tract, primarily in our small and large intestine. And there, the bacteria make up, as you mentioned, 70% of our immune system. So every time we eat food that might have some bad bacteria, the good bacteria help to kill that off. Whereas if you don't have that good bacteria, if you were to eat food that had some bad bacteria on it, you would just get food sickness. You would get food poisoning. And it's not even that the bad bacteria is bad. You know, we've come to vilify strep, or we've come to vilify H. pylori, or we've come, and H. pylori is a natural colonizer of our body. It's naturally found in our stomach, and maybe it actually serves a purpose. But the fact that the germ theory and medicine always wants us to get rid of all the bad bacteria really overall weakens our immune systems, weakens our body, and weakens our overall defense mechanism, because every time it's killing off bad bacteria, it's also killing off good bacteria.
Yeah, and then there was a senior doctor, I heard him say a few years ago, and he used the expression, you see people in their 70s and 80s that are eating a decent, proper diet, but it looks like they're withering away. And he said it's real simple. They just don't have enough digestive enzymes in their system to process properly. And I think, in my view, that's where, you know, supplementing one's diet, especially as one gets older, with a digestive enzyme, so that you're able to utilize the nutrition that you're either eating, taking, or trying to supplement with.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's go to a break, Ron. We're going to go to a break, yep. And then we'll talk about some digestive enzymes when we come back. And I also want to get onto the topic of raw milk, because you mentioned that in terms of bacteria, and so I think that this is a good time to start to maybe bring that into the conversation. What do you think about that?
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
Okay, so this is Dr. Millie. You are listening to Eating for Meaning here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm broadcasting to you live from my clinic at 903 Franklin Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. And if you like what you're hearing, please do follow along to the show or go to my blog at www.milliesays.com and follow along that way. Today, my special guest is Ron Eichner. He is a egg farmer and poultry farmer and sauerkraut maker and raw milk advocate. And I would say he's a visionary for the Farm Wellness Center. And we're going to return. When we return, we're going to have Ron back on discussing raw milk and concepts of wellness here on Eating for Meaning.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Eating for Meaning. This is Dr. Millie, and I'm the host, and I have a very special guest with me today. His name is Ron Eichner. He is the owner and operator of Eichner's Family Farm in Wexford, Pennsylvania. They have been serving the freshest eggs in the North Hills since 1932, and he has a fully functioning family farm and farmer's market there, and he has a vision for a wellness center. So he is somewhat of a health guru, and I know people come to him and ask his advice and talk about their health symptoms, and I find this concept very interesting and inspiring and very homegrown, and I love the whole idea of bringing medicine into the home and into the kitchen, and of course into the farm is a great place for medicine to happen. And so thanks so much for being on the show today, Ron. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been hopefully, I mean, it's a lot of fun as far as on, you know, our parts, but hopefully, you know, people are getting a little insight or a little bit of knowledge from what we're talking about.
Yeah, so we're talking about how to create wellness in your life. And so everything from eating a regular balance, this is not anything that's new and novel. This is kind of where we both, I think, agree that it's about returning to the roots and returning to good, solid concepts and foundations of wellness, eating a balanced nutrition, eating regular meals, getting proper sleep. I mean, these are really the ways to generate wellness for yourself, but the impact is absolutely massive. If you work at generating wellness for yourself on a regular basis, on a daily basis, and always think about your nutrition levels and always think about your wellness, you know, even when you're doing something else, there's always a level of self-care that needs to be there, then you can actually prevent the common diseases that most Americans are suffering from. And really they're suffering from them because they're not paying attention to wellness whatsoever.
Yeah, that's very valid. And one thing I wanted to discuss just briefly was toxicities and detoxifying. And I got a real quick story that I heard about 3 years ago, and it was on a local radio station here in Pittsburgh. And the host had Steve Wahlberg from White Horse Ministries out in Washington State on, and what the story was when Steve's son was 3 and a half, Steve and his wife were driving down a road in Northern California, and his wife looks back, and her little boy's having a seizure. And to their surprise, and so they took him to two top neurology centers out in California, and both said, it's very unfortunate, diagnosis of seizure, all we can really do is just balance it out with meds. Well, Steve must have put something on his website, and a doctor friended him and basically said, hey, did anybody suggest any type of blood testing and such? And I guess the answer was no. And so they went to the blood testing route, and here it was discovered that at 3 and a half, the boy was heavily detoxified in heavy metals. Well, they went to a commercial, and I walked in our egg room. My dad was candling eggs, and I cited to him what I had heard, and I posed a question. I said, how can a little one in less than 3 and a half years be so heavily detoxified? Could it have started in the mother's womb? Well, sure enough, when they come off the break, Steve said the doctor did 10 experiments, and his wife, the doctor's own wife, was one of 10. All 10 women were expecting, but all 10 women had different levels of toxicity. And so the point I want to make is whenever, if I mention something about, you know, toxins to the people, a lot of times they look and say, well, I'm not exposed to anything. Well, it's all around us. And basically that story, it's called Toxic Trouble. And the website, the little booklet costs $1 that talks about it. And it's called, I believe it's toxictrouble.com. But here what had happened, the treatment was chelation therapy and a few other things, and this doctor sternly said that we can get to the source of the problem, just not mask the symptom. There may be a seizure or two. Well, through the detoxification, you know, now I think that the little boy is probably 11 or 12 years old, but after 6 months he had no future seizures or seizures to date. And I'm not knocking the medical community, but, you know, the tools they had was recognizing the fact and saying, this is what we can do. And here this doctor had the experience and the foresight, and just through simple detoxifications was able to get to the origin of the problem, just not mask the symptom. And you got a very happy ending. And I think that's a great little story for anyone really to say, wow, it must be important to detoxify. And we're thinking of wellness, you know, detoxification or detoxing is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, detoxification is a normal function of our body. It happens every single day. We've got 5 or 6 organs of detoxification that are constantly moving debris, toxins, old immune components. If we're exposed to heavy metals, or if we're exposed to plastics, if we're exposed to chemical fumes, if we're exposed to medications, even voluntarily, even if we're, recreational drugs, alcohol, things like that, everything that we're, even pesticides in food. So all of those things our body has to detoxify from. Our skin detoxifies, our lungs detoxify, carbon dioxide, which is a waste gas, it's a gas product, but it's a waste product. Our colon and our liver metabolizes all the heavy metals and the estrogens and the pesticides and the drugs, and our colon takes it out of the body. And then we've got the water-soluble components detoxified by our kidneys, which get taken out through the urinary bladder, through our urine. So our body is constantly detoxifying. And if we are, as you said, we're all exposed to chemicals. We live in a chemical world. I mean, half of the things around us are made of plastic, and no plastics are safe. They all degrade in the waterways, and they're all estrogenic. We all breathe exhaust fumes. We all are exposed to acid rain. We're all exposed to radiation from cell phone towers and from our television and from our computers. And so there's really no escaping toxins. We have to just face that as a fact. But some people have the ability to process toxins more, and so, or some people are exposed to more toxins. And so heavy metal in water, heavy metal in vaccines, heavy metals in dental amalgams or in fish. I mean, these are really big sources of heavy metals like arsenic or lead or cadmium or mercury, and that can definitely damage our cells, definitely damage our neurological system. And so part of being well is to identify what we have been exposed to and what we have been hurt by or imbalanced from, and try to get rid of that if that issue is still there. So detoxification is absolutely a normal everyday function. And if we're not detoxifying well, if our livers are already overburdened, or if we're already if we're constipated, if we're not having regular bowel movements, if we're not exercising or moving our bodies, if we're not breathing deeply, then by not doing all of these things, then we can't actually expect to get rid of the toxins that we do. And all mothers pass along toxins to their children through breast milk, and also just by bearing a child. A woman is passing along her toxic load to her child. I mean, that's just how biology is. And so we're all impacted by each other and our environment. It's just a fact.
Hey, one other thought that jumped into my mind with wellness is exercising and the value of exercising. And in my view, it should be part of like daily movements. You know, what you do and how you do it. It's so easy to sit in a chair, or even, I like to use this expression, you know, 20 years ago you didn't have a clicker on a TV. If you want to change a channel, you got up and you changed the channel. And I think people, they're getting into habits of, not as much movement, not as much exercise. And you can get exercise from just doing menial things around the house or outside doing gardening. Or if you need even more, you can help others. I mean, I've had some people say that they get tired just watching me move around. Conceivably, you just, you have to keep the body, moving, burning energy. I heard a guy say that if you want to eat like a lumberjack, you got to work like a lumberjack. And a lot of times whenever I tell people, you know, what I do or what I eat, it's just what I need to do to sustain, you know, my energy level. But, you know, back to the exercising, doctor, if you just want to just maybe just touch on a few points, how important that is for the wellness of, you know, one's body.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, what exercising does, first of all, is it causes us to breathe deeply. And so when we breathe deeply, then we oxygenate all of the areas of our body that might not, that might be harder to, for oxygen and blood to get to. So the ends of our fingers, the ends of our toes, our brains, our scalp, our genitals, all of these kind of extremities are more difficult to oxygenate. And so when we're exercising, our heart is actually pushing blood more. And what blood does is blood delivers oxygen to all of our body parts. That's one of the functions of blood. And so it's very important for cellular health in all of these areas of our body. Also, it allows us to deliver nutrients to all of these areas of the body. So exercising does that. Exercising also makes us feel good. It produces, so whereas stress, when we're under stress, we produce stressful chemicals that make us feel bad, make us feel anxious. We produce endorphins and we produce, we produce adrenaline and we produce cortisol. When we're exercising, we get that what's known as the runner's high or the exercising high. So we actually produce opiates. We produce chemicals, natural chemicals in our body called endorphins and cephalins that actually make us feel good. They make us feel bliss. They make us feel joy. And the more you get exposed to those kinds of chemicals, the better off you feel on a daily basis, the less stress you have, but also the more joy and pleasure you have just in your daily life. And so the more you can expose your brain to those good feelings, the less likely you'll rely on anything else, any kind of like negative outlets or negative coping mechanisms in order to procure that same result. And then lastly, I would say is that exercising tones our body and tones our muscles and builds up our physical structure, and so that we have more lean muscle mass, and then that lean muscle mass is burning calories even when we're at rest. And it doesn't mean you have to go to the gym and spend an hour pumping iron a day. Just like you say, just going on walks or just doing yard work or just doing your, you know, getting up and changing the channel, walking up the stairs in your apartment building instead of taking the elevator, walking to the store instead of driving everywhere you go. Even just getting some movement, some physical movement, will still allow you to tone your muscles, burn body fat, improve sleep, lower stress, and change your metabolism and even other things. I mean, exercising, you can increase your good cholesterol, you lower your sugar, you lower your blood pressure, so you improve sleep, which is also definitely related to all of those markers. So it's absolutely crucial to exercise. It's a sedentary life will just generate not only obesity, not only just, you know, not being attractive, but also all of these metabolic issues that all of America is concerned with.
Yeah, and another point that I got thinking, and I'm only guessing when you make the comment how it's possibly perceived, and I know I've made this comment countless times, numerous times, and basically what it is I would welcome to live to be well into my three-digit numbers. And naturally, you know, you want to do it with health. You kind of, you know, say to live to 120 years with health. And,
yeah.
You know, you're serious with it. I'm serious with it, you know. But most people, or at least in my experience, they look at it and say, you know how much fun you're going to be at 120? Well, it's only a number. I mean, we don't know what we can do until we try it or achieve it. And just that goal in itself is, you know, it's built by what I said earlier with a wellness foundation. You know, you put the blocks together, you build something solid, you try to take care of yourself. You know, you're going to get beat up in life, but the biggest thing is how you rebound from it, how you bring things back into balance. And I don't think that's that hard of an achievement, because I think we have the tools, and, all that we can do is just try to, you know, implement a plan or concept. Now, the question I have for you, doctor, as far as when you made that profession, if you will, meaning, you know, to live to 120, have you had any feedback from from any patients, clients, or acquaintances?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody has their own opinion on that because people think about aging as illness. When people think about being old, they automatically think about being ill. And so that is one reason why I make that bold claim that my plan is to live till 120, and I invite you to join me. I invite everybody to join me because it's not a number that, you know, if I fail, well, that's okay. I mean, I don't see that there's any really risk with failing because as long as I'm trying, the purpose of it is that I'm trying to live without illness for the duration of my life. And so I'm always working to keep my body in balance and always working to keep my mind, spirit, and body healthy and never let myself get bogged down by lifestyle illnesses, all these preventable illnesses that Americans are living with and suffering from. For the last 10 to 30 years of their life, Americans are suffering with arthritis and high blood pressure and diabetes, and how many comorbid disorders or how many diseases are associated just with having diabetes, you know, blindness and neuropathy and pain and cholesterol problems and heart attacks and depression. So I wouldn't want to be 120 and be sick. And so the purpose is always allowing ourselves to live with wellness because the number 120 is a biblical number. It is in the Old Testament and in other religion texts as well, Jewish texts and also in Hindi, that you wish people to live until they're 120. So it's almost an extension of, it's a wish for somebody else that they live until 120. So it's actually a positive goal. And if you live until 120, then it does mean that you're well. People who are living till 120 are not the sickest people. These are the people who have the best spirit and have the best attitude and have a will to live. Because I think a lot of part about health and especially life or death is that it's a choice that we're making. And people can choose. You can choose whether to give in to illness or whether to give in to pain or to give in to suffering. And you can also choose the opposite. And by choosing the opposite, then health will follow you. So it's a philosophical stance, I guess, more than it is the importance of whether I accomplish the number. So I don't care what people say. People can say whatever they want.
Yeah. Well, and conceivably, like in your family, in my family, and I have, a lot of family friends that were blessed with longevity. When I'm talking being in their 90s. And conceivably, there's a lot of times younger people don't want to be around older people. Well, I look at them like being an encyclopedia, you know, just the stuff that you can learn. And the ones that I knew that got well into their 90s, they had health. Yes, they had a few little issues, but they always had that sparkle in their eye. They always had that desire. And the biggest thing was, you know, you just want to continue. And conceivably, that's, we all got just one round at this, and conceivably, I think if we can just be good students, good models, and do everything to the best of our ability by the gifts that God gives us. And I'm not trying to get religious on people, but I feel that the things I do each and every day, and that starts the day and finishes the day, just thanking God for the opportunity and to be able to do what I can do with the resources that He gives me. That's all that I am is an extension of Him, and I don't stand on a soapbox and try to profess that what I'm doing is the best. All I'm trying to do is just do the best of my ability through the graces that He gives us.
And so you are doing some extra special things, and I really do want to give a few minutes to talk about raw milk and how you're making that possible for people in your community to drink raw milk. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Raw milk has always—it's been kind of a controversy, I guess, for probably 50 years, and it seems like you would think that when we get more knowledge, you know, there shouldn't be a controversy. But my family years ago had cattle like most farms did for, number one, self-sufficiency of having your own dairy products, but also to sell. And 50, 60 years ago, I think it was by design. What I mean is larger farms exceeded the amount of milk that they could produce for their customers. They needed more dairy, and I think that's when pasteurization came into play. And basically, pasteurization is a heating process of milk, and it's, I use the expression, it cleans up on marginal dairy. I'm not trying to knock or malice the dairy industry, but there's always, in my view, an underlying thing of industrialization, and I feel that this pasteurization or the processing of milk is really an industrialization, and I don't think it's for the better. It seems like, you know, raw dairy, as we knew before it was altered, is really dairy that's alive.
Okay, yeah, so raw dairy comes straight from the cow. It's got the bacteria that we talked about, and of course, everybody's afraid of the bad bacteria overgrowth, but they never consider, or very few people consider, all the good bacteria. And so, again, it does come down to our own gut health, and if we have the ability to tolerate some bad bacteria. But it also has to do with, you're right, I mean, pasteurization allows the mixing of many different farms worth of milk to come together and be mixed together, and so not have those bacteria merge. So it is an industrialization or an extension of, you know, the drive to produce more milk for more people. But in terms of the health, the overall health seems to be somewhat sacrificed, because, I mean, in France they eat raw milk cheese, but yet in certain places in North America it's actually illegal to make raw milk cheese. And in France, even pregnant women eat raw milk cheese, and whereas here in America, it's like pregnant women are recommended, you know, never to eat raw milk cheese when you're pregnant. And that's, I mean, I tell my patients that that's overly cautious, but my own personal view on it is that it's kind of preposterous. But it does have to do with the health of our country as well, because we've gotten to a point where we can't handle any bacteria because of this over antibiotic use. Like, do you think that raw milk is good for more people?
Yeah, I mean, what I find very appalling is, I mentioned earlier about the Department of Agriculture. In my case, it's the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture, and each state has health departments, and then your counties, each county generally has health departments. And then you got the dairy industry. And what I find appalling is a dairy farmer that's trying to produce raw milk and selling his raw dairy, whether it's milk, whether he manufactures into a cheese or yogurt or any type of a raw milk commodity, they're looked at as actually being a leper. They're looked at as jeopardizing the health and welfare of the public. Now, this word comes down from the authority, meaning the Department of Agriculture, from especially the health departments. And I think it's a lot of fears and unjustified fears. And you know, now since we've refined milk in the aspects of pasteurizing and homogenizing, the pasteurization and heating process basically destroys a lot of enzymes, a lot of proteins, strips away vitamins. So then you end up now with a new disease when people are lactose intolerant. And so the blame becomes milk. And actually, yeah, maybe a blame can be processed milk, the blame shouldn't be lumped in with raw dairy. And the point of summary I want to make is authorities should help to try to support a farmer, even if he's doing raw dairy. They shouldn't try to create the fallacy that it's a problem. My personal opinion is the reason why they want to suppress raw dairy is because they don't want the truth and education and the knowledge to be put out there of once milk is processed, it just changes the properties.
Yeah. I mean, I think they also want to control farmers. I think they want to control agriculture. And so if farmers are just, doing their own thing, producing raw milk, then it's fewer people that are in their wings, and I think from that perspective it's like business related and economics, because they really do want more farmers participating in mass agriculture, right?
Yep, and well, here in Pennsylvania, there's been in the last 2 years three or four flare-ups, and it's quote tied to raw milk, and I think it was artificially created for a whole host of reasons. But one day, I spent the better part of a day trying to get through the Pennsylvania Department of the Pennsylvania Department of Health, along with the Allegheny County Department of Health, and basically at the state level, they sent out a press release. And you probably know, Doctor, that the most interesting way to try to get something conveyed is send a creative press release to the media. And basically, they were saying about the unsafety of raw milk, and basically what I said to the health department, so I wanted to sternly express, whenever you have these issues, if there even is an issue, can you please safeguard the public to say, hey, when you're buying perishable items, whether it's dairy, meat, or whatever, and you're not going directly home, to have a cooler with ice. And, you know, the health department would laugh at me, and I said, no, I'm serious. You know, we got to keep reminding the public, because in my case at my farm, I've had people, say, 10 years ago come up, you know, have a dozen of eggs, a pound of bacon, a pound of sausage, and a chicken, a fresh roasting chicken, and the question is, how long will this hold up in my car? And I'd say, well, do you have a cooler? And the answer is no. And I said, well, how long until you get home? And they said, well, I still got 4 or 5 stops to go to. And I said, oh, my gosh, why would you make us the last stop? And they said, well, it's an inconvenience. The point I want to make is, you know, the average person, if they buy this stuff and they don't take care of it properly and they have a problem, Ron caused the problem, or Ron's a source of the problem. But it's, to me, it's important to keep reminding the public, maybe it's smart to have a cooler with some ice.
Right. So, yeah, so fresh, unpasteurized food being better quality is also more perishable. I mean, that is overall a good thing, but it does increase risk because it increases bacteria growth, you know, potential for the actual food. And I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And so, yeah, if you're going to the Eichner family farm, then absolutely bring a cooler. Are you crazy?
Yeah, I mean, it's just common knowledge in my view. I know growing up, you know, my mother always had coolers, and it just seemed like people got away from them, and I think it's because it's a bit of an inconvenience. And, you know, one point I want to make about myself, you know, with the way I've been an advocate for a lot of things, you know, it's kind of a joke amongst family members and friends. I'm like a fireman. You know, a fireman runs, you know, into the building to the fire, and most people are running out. And I do that for a lot of causes because it's what I believe in. But most importantly, I try to do my research to go in and be an advocate for all the positive reasons.
Okay, well, that's wonderful, Ron. And it's been a great having you on the show today. Can you give everybody your information, how they reach you, how they find you?
As far as you mean address or?
Yep, whatever you want, however people can reach you, find you. I know you have a website, you have a mail out as well, so if people want to hear what you have to say or read what you have to say, how do they get in touch with you?
Basically, we have a website I think my sister-in-law has up. We take emails. It's eichnersfarm@gmail.com. And basically, our phone number is here. If someone wanted to talk to me personally, they can reach me at 724-935-2131 or 724-935-2897. And I just want to, you know, thank you, Dr. Millie, for taking the time or having the time to that we could spend and talk about this. And I think it could be something of a model to expand with.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a great touching base with you on these issues, and we have a lot in common, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I really appreciate you coming on. And so say hello to your family and everybody at the Eichner Farm. Ron Eichner, everybody, thanks so much for tuning in. This is Dr. Millie. I am a naturopathic doctor and a certified nutrition specialist, and this is my weekly show called Eating for Meaning here on Blog Talk Radio. And Eating for Meaning is actually a year-long nutrition program where I teach you how to change your relationship to food. And so that includes everything from meal plans to but primarily helping you tune into your own body's response to food and your own physical symptoms and mental symptoms and how those correlate with food. And every single day, every single time that you put something in your mouth, you have the opportunity to expand on your health or you have an opportunity to make yourself sick. And so which way are you choosing? And if you're blind to this, if you're not aware of what you're doing or what the results of certain food choices have on you, then I would love to help you. And so please do go to my website at www.milliesays.com. That's MilliesSays.com. Sign up to receive my newsletter or follow me along here on blogtalkradio.com. I broadcast live every Thursday from Mountain. It's my clinic in Brooklyn at 903 Franklin Avenue, Brooklyn. That's in the Crown Heights area of Brooklyn. And I hope you'll tune into me next show as well. Again, thanks so much to Ron Eichner, my guest.